Blackwood, who's talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, since his election in 2014, Charles Blackwood has served us as sheriff of Orange County. And I persuaded him to come and chat with us, with all of us, about some of the things that he's doing on in training and new equipment and crime fighting and just the overall relationship between his crew, his associates, and the people of Orange County. And Sheriff, again, congratulations, and congratulations to the community for electing you. We got a good man serving the sheriff.
Thank you very much, and I do appreciate your tact in getting me here. You know, we've talked about this for some time, and for those of you that don't know DG, he's pretty persistent, and I applaud his methods. He just simply said, "See you Thursday." So here we are.
Well, we have been talking on the side about some of the things that you've been doing. Again, you're elected in 2014, so you're not a new sheriff anymore.
That's right.
You're into it. One of the things that I've observed and we've talked about is that all of a sudden the deputies and you are wearing a different kind of uniform.
Yes,
sir. What happened?
Well, we initially, in taking office, one of the things we talked about, our desire to accomplish, was a culture change. And the culture change in our agency, I felt, needed to start with us, with me, and our command staff, and work outward. It's interesting when an agency has been doing things as they've been doing them for so long. And for those of you that don't know me, I was with the sheriff's office for 35 years before I ran for sheriff. So I wasn't new to the agency, but there were a lot of things that we were doing just because that's the way they'd always been done. And with any agency that has leadership that doesn't change, things kind of become stagnant, for good or bad. And not in any way saying that anything we were doing was bad. We just needed to try some new things. With the way things change in our community, with things change nationally, if you don't change to meet the needs of those you serve, you can fall behind the curve. And we immediately began changing our operational core. We established a mission statement and a vision statement. We also talked about changing the outward image. The internal culture, we grasped that really quick and made that change. And the guys were coming to us saying, you know, we just feel like these uniforms are not, quote, unquote, professional.
Just describe for those who are listening who can't visualize the uniforms.
Before the change, we were wearing a dark brown pant. It was polyester, and it had a black stripe up the leg. We were wearing a desert tan or khaki-colored shirt with a bright orange patch on the side on the shoulders. And we heard terms like brown dirt cowboy, dust bunny. It was just old, and it was time for a change. And we talked to a lot of I talked to a lot of other sheriffs in this state. We looked outward to other states, and the color that we found that was most, I guess you would say, centered in this area of North Carolina was the dark gray slacks that was made out of a wool blend that was much more breathable and much more comfortable. It was more durable, cost less, and the gray shirt, a real light gray shirt. And it just immediately, when the guys started wearing this, we began to hear the term professional, which exactly was bullseye of what we wanted to do. And the citizens commented on how professional we looked. And when you do something like that and you walk out in the public, for better or for worse, as you do, to go do your job, and people walk up to you and tell you, "Man, you look good," or "That really looks professional," you can't help but feel it. Mm. So intrinsically, it became valuable to us.
Well, other than the uniform change, which you say that's a symbolic of asking us as the citizens to view the sheriff's department in a new eye.
Office.
What else?
Office.
A new office.
Sheriff's office.
The whole office, the employees, and the deputies, and everybody on your staff.
Our office, and we've got a little running. Well, it's not a joke. It's serious. We are not a department. We are not part of county government. We are the office, and it's a constitutional office. So the sheriff's office is a constitutional office. I draw my powers from the United States Constitution. And for that reason, if anyone in the agency uses the term department,
you correct them.
We have a little jar that they have to contribute.
How much do they owe you?
No, you're good. You've never seen grown men and women laugh so much over a dollar.
Let's talk about it's a dollar. I can't afford that. Let's talk about the office and its relationship under the North Carolina Constitution, I guess. And nevertheless, you see, not a part of county government, but the county funds you. The county commission, so you have a relationship.
We do. Interesting relationship. And I'd use my analogy is one that's very simple. When you become 18 years old, you consider yourself an adult. And then you get your insurance bill for your car, and you have to go to your mother or father and ask for help. Well, I'm a grown-up adult, but I have to go to the county government for funding for anything that we do. The way that the Constitution has the office drawn up is that we're standalone from county government. The employees are my employees. They're not employees of the county government. For that reason, we don't have to use human resources. We can create our own. But because they're there and we have such a good working relationship with county government, we choose to do that. I don't have to give them vacation, but we do that because it's the right thing to do. So it is an interesting relationship.
Well, it puts you in a position of being maybe the most powerful official in Orange County, in the sense that if you choose to, you have fewer limits on what you can do with your personnel.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That your employees need to be loyal to you rather than just being loyal to the people.
That's correct, and it's very interesting. And as recently as last 2 months ago, a case was settled out of Mecklenburg County that very well stated that loyalty is something that you can be terminated for. Political affiliation. Never think of doing that as something that you can be terminated for. Support of your sheriff is something you can be terminated for, and it's been upheld by the courts. So it is a powerful position. It's not lost on me that it comes with great responsibility, though.
We have other law enforcement agencies in the county. The towns, the villages have their police departments. The campus has a police department. And so And these are people who work for other entities. They are not constitutional officers.
Correct.
Exactly. And how do you all sort out what responsibility the sheriff has for law enforcement, and then are you required to defer to the responsibilities within the towns, or do you overlap with them?
We have complete authority throughout the county, inside the city, on campus, everywhere, within every boundary of the county. We have a working relationship and an understanding. There's no need in duplicating services. That would be counterproductive to my agency. So for those corporate city limits that have police departments, or the mall who have a company police, or the university who has the university police, or for that matter, the hospital, which has its own police, it's just better served to let them do their jobs, let us do ours, and if they need us, or if we're inside the city limits and witness a crime, we can certainly take police action if it's immediately necessary. The only place that they cannot enforce law is with the civil law. So civil process, the sheriff is the only one who can handle that throughout the county. So,
but if when I was rushing out here to see you, I might have been going a little bit over the speed limit.
Well,
and I'm in within the town limits, past the sheriff's car, a deputy's car.
Yes,
he's got authority to arrest me. Just
absolutely.
And would you instruct him to try to enforce the laws in the city, or say that leave that to the Chapel Hill Police?
What we do is we try to curb clear-cut substantial violations of the law. Now, some people would argue that if the speed limit is 35 miles per hour, that a 36 is a clear-cut substantial violation. It's my opinion that we use the 10 mile per hour or 15 miles per hour, of course, would be a clear and egregious violation of the law, and they would stop you for that and cite you. Deputies would.
Deputy would inside the city.
Yes. In fact, yesterday, part of that collaboration that we have worked on with our neighboring agencies, we worked with Chapel Hill Police on a saturation program over on Homestead, right at Homestead and MLK. We worked from 1 till about 3 o'clock with a saturation there, and we've got several upcoming. The Highway Patrol, Campus Police, Carborough Police, and all of us work together to handle those when we can. And it just it boosts that collaboration.
So you'd organize a task force, and you would agree among yourselves that you might have one of the officers be the coordinator, I guess.
Correct.
Of that. And,
correct.
And you would look to that person.
Yeah, and Chapel Hill coordinates those within their city limits. Now, I do have a officer who works directly with the governor's highway safety program, and he can set those programs up anywhere in the county he chooses. And what we do, if we're gonna set them up with Chapel Hill in the Chapel Hill city, we'll go to their leaders and say, we'd like to help you, even if we're spearheading it. And the only place that I can think we've done that recently is out off of 15501 South, coming in where it's actually county bleeding into the city. And it worked really well there, and we'll have one of those in the very near future.
If you join us late, we're visiting with Sheriff Charles Blackwood. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is the Sheriff of Orange County, Charles Blackwood.
Hello.
And you're telling us a little bit about how your office works. Depending on where you are, you see the sheriff's office in different ways. And those of us who are ordinary citizens mostly see you as helping the county coordinated law enforcement activities. But you mentioned about civil law responsibilities, where you said we have exclusive responsibilities in that area. What are you talking about?
Well, the civil law is those laws which generally include money, monetary damage, torts. So if one has been wronged by another and there is a lawsuit that comes about because of that, and there are processes that have to be served to give one notice to appear, generally it will appear in the way of a summons and complaint. And that summons will cite out exactly where they feel they have been wronged. It will list what tort they wish to recover, and it will give a date and time for them to appear in court to have that heard. And that's civil court, civil district court, or if it's been through district court, civil superior court. And those notices have to be served timely. There's a time limit on them. They have to be served correctly, and they can only be served by a sheriff or his deputy or designee. Now, there are instances where one can hire a private process server to serve certain papers, but there are certain papers that have to be served by the sheriff. But a police officer or highway patrolman or company police officer cannot serve those papers.
So primarily you've got the law enforcement responsibility where you have to have a sheriff's deputy out on patrol, on call, and then you have the responsibility that some sheriff's deputies have to be out helping the civil courts, including serving lawsuits on people.
Yeah.
And how many people give us an idea about how many people you got doing
Great segue into, we have anywhere between 150 and 156 employees. And that includes our jail staff, our court staff, our administrative staff in the office, and some civilian staff as well, plus the patrol and investigations. So most folks, when they think about the sheriff, the first image that comes to their mind is, the OK Corral or a dirt street, a sheriff and, drawing his gun in front of some saloon. Hollywood has not been real kind to the office of sheriff over the years. And we have worked hard to raise the standards in North Carolina to point out to folks that we do hold ourselves to a higher standard. We do a lot more than just those duties. So on any given day, you've got a patrol division which monitors the roads, answers the calls for service that come in from 911, and responds to the general emergencies that occur daily. You've also got a series of officers who are school resource officers who are working in the elementary, middle, and high schools within the county. not in the city limits, but with except Hillsborough. And there has been some discussion about expanding that to the southern end of the county and to the Chapel Hill City Schools. And if they work that out, we'll figure out a way to make that happen. But for right now, we're not being asked to do that. Then I've got investigators that investigate those crimes that are reported to us. I have court officers that work the courts that make sure that the judges are safe.
These are the guys we call the bailiffs?
Well, we've got deputies and we've got bailiffs. The deputies are uniformed officers that are in the courts.
And the bailiff is a court official or is he a part of the sheriff's?
A bailiff is part of the sheriff's office. And generally, our bailiffs are coat and tie. And when we use the term bailiff, that's different than a deputy. They'll work civil superior court. They'll work some.
What does the bailiff do and what does the deputy do?
Bailiff handles ministerial tasks.
Like, for instance,
opening court, handing documents.
He'll be there.
Oh, yes. This honorable court for the county of Orange is now open and setting for the dispatch of its business. The honorable Judge Joseph M. Buckner is presiding. God save the state and this honorable court. You may be seated and please turn your cell phones off.
So you do that every now and then.
Oh, yes, I do. I did it for a number of years. And the bailiffs are not deputies, and we do have several bailiffs or civilian officers.
What's the difference in terms of the authority and the oath that the official would take?
Well, a bailiff doesn't necessarily, if they're a bailiff, have arrest provisions. They're not able to, or authority, I should say. But we do have those officers that work security, the main entrance. We have one entrance to the courthouse. And you have to come through the metal detector, and you have to go through the screening.
And will
process.
Those be deputies or bailiffs?
They're
or
deputies.
Just other
employees? They are deputies, and they're armed, and they do have the authority to arrest. And we have one chief court services officer who oversees the entire judicial campus.
Everything that the sheriff's office is doing in the courts, you have one coordinating person.
One coordinating person.
So they answer. Person's in charge of the bailiffs, in charge of the deputies who serve
everything
the courts.
In court services. Yes, sir.
And would that include the servers who serve the papers that at the initiation of a lawsuit or
no? That's a civil process unit, and that's a different division. One of the things I do want to point out: we have several courthouses. You know, we've got the courthouse in Hillsborough, which is actually several courtrooms. We've got the old and ancient courthouse across the street. And then we have the courthouse in Chapel Hill, and we have a hearing office at the hospital for those hospital hearings that we have to deal with. And they're all staffed, not all at one time. Some days there are as many as five courts running, but most of the time we're not taxed to the point that we've got all of them open.
So would any of your officers, your deputies, move from place to place? You'd say, I need you in court this week, but after that, I'm going to put you on investigations, or I'm going to put you out on the field, or
generally the court staff works in the court, and uh-huh. they do transportation as needed. People would be amazed at the amount of miles we cover daily, moving people either to and from other institutions where they are kept, correctional institutions, or from jails in other counties for hearings here. I know that I had an officer going to Hickory this morning. So we're all over the state, thousands of miles a month.
Talk to us a little bit about the jails and who are your, or where do the people who run the jail fit, and how large a facility do we have, and how is it populated?
Our jail, the initial construction was in 1929. It has had several renovations over the years. Through funds that we've secured, both through the federal marshals giving us monies to house their inmates. It's a program that we're signed into with them. We're uniquely situated between Greensboro and Raleigh, so they have to move those federal inmates
Are you more in the business of contracting with the federal government than you are in housing people who've been arrested for crimes and need to be held in Orange County?
It's about a 60-40 split, 60 being our people and 40 being federal inmates. And that changes from time to time. We also have entered into a program called the Statewide Misdemeanor Confinement Program. And that's where if a individual is found guilty of a crime that's going to place them in a facility for not less than a year, no more than a little bit more than a year, they don't go to state penitentiary any longer. The counties have to house them, and we have a certain amount of beds set aside if the program needs to place one from another county that we can accept them. We also are a sending agency to other counties if we need to situate ours that way. But going back to your question about how the jail is situated, it is across the street from our main administrative office. It's located on Court Street.
In Hillsboro.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we try to keep it anywhere between 100 and 125 to 130-some inmates. And when I say try, we strategically place them. But that's about where we are. We have four squads that work at the jail, and they come to work every day.
And what would be and during the time one of those squads is on site, how many people would be on the squad, and what would each of them be doing?
Between 5 and 8 people on each squad.
So you got guards, you got cooks.
I'm just talking about uniformed personnel. Now we have a doctor. We have Southern Health Partners. We contract with to take care of all of our health services at the jail. We have a dietary staff that I hire that works in the cafeteria always. That's all they do.
In the jail cafeteria.
Correct. And we're held to a standard that's very high for the meals that they serve, nutritional value.
And who sets that standard?
The state. The state of North Carolina jail.
And so who comes to enforce that?
The state jail inspector.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
And so although you're a constitutional office, you have some responsibilities to other people.
Absolutely. And also the county commissioners have placed a provision within that says that 10% must come locally, and
10% of
the foods that we serve.
Oh, wow.
So it's a good thing to do that, and we go to the farmer's market and purchase that, the produce and whatnot that we can from them, and that helps to save money and give back to North Carolina as well. And so that's the jail operations now. I will tell you that our jail is in dire need of some improvement. There are programs that we desperately want to put in place that are geared towards looking after the soul rather than to punish people. We've got people. I say that some of the most forgotten people in Orange County are housed in our jails, both that work there and both that are housed there on both sides of the bar, I say. Our mental health issues that come up either turn up at the emergency room or at the jail, and neither one of us are able to deal with them adequately. So we have worked very hard in Orange County to embrace programs that will look after one's mind, their heart, their body, and their soul, so that when they leave our jail, there's a high probability that it will never come back.
Well, a lot of people say that many of the folks who are confined in our prisons and in our jails, that their basic problem is not the criminal mind, but a mental illness.
And that is absolutely correct. And I formed and helped to organize a mental health task force when working with Marie Lamoureux, who is now retired but still doing some work. She was with the judge's office, the district court judge's office. We've got a very active mental health group now working. Kate Finhagen, of course, has been hired to come in as our justice coordinator for the county. And, you know, that was one of the things that we pushed for. I wanted to hire her. And the defense bar kind of got their feathers a bit ruffled because they said, how can you, without bias, employ someone who's going to be helping people get out of your jail? And after some really open and frank conversation that started out not to be, I would say, very productive, we got to that conversation. I'll credit one of our defense attorneys, James Williams, for coming up with the idea to let's all get together, sit down at the table, and we sat down at Spanky's table upstairs and had a conference, and I went in and gave them my idea of what I wanted to.
Well, what's different as a result of that discussion?
Nothing. I'm just not in charge of it. The county is in charge of it. Kate Finhagen answers directly to Miss Bonnie Hammersley, our county manager, and not to me, which takes away the outward overview that it might be me persuading her to do one thing or the other with our inmates, which was one of the things that I had pledged not to do. But I understand their position, and I think that we're in a better place by having it done this way. Kate Finhagen was the person that I wanted to hire for the position, so I got what I wanted. They got what they wanted, and we're in a much better place
and
now.
How is it better?
It's better because we now have somebody that's helping put these programs.
What is she doing? I mean, what's happening that makes it better?
We are currently working on, we have got a new thing called Stepping Up. It's the Stepping Up Initiative, where we have a doctor who's able to come in and almost daily, if not weekly, go through the jail. We had Dr. Coy, who came to us from the prisons, Darren Coy, and he was working with us to help us identify what our mental health needs were. But now it's done on a much broader level, and we've got Cardinal Innovations that stepped in to help us with that. So what we did is we sat down and we said, here's what we need to do. Let's quit talking about it. Let's do it. Right. And we got folks over with the hospital, with the mental health center there. Caitlin is a great organizer and a great make-things-happen person, and she's able to help us get these programs up and running. We just got a call day before yesterday from Bladen County Sheriff Jim McVicker, who was his county commissioners had probed him to, hey, let's get this going here. So he called. I was able to get Caitlin on the phone. They're already in, the gears are turning to make it happen there. So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing when we can say we recognize that we've got mental health issues. They're not criminal issues. Let's get them out of criminal court. Let's get them the help they need and get them out of our jail.
We're visiting with Charles Blackwood. He's the sheriff of Orange County. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with our sheriff, Charles Blackwood, and we're talking about some of his programs. I want to shift gears just a little bit, Sheriff, and have your we're in the middle of a country that seems up in the air and broken up into some kind of painful disagreements and attitudes about the role of law enforcement, about the pressures that are put on law enforcement officers, about the danger that particularly minority young people are in. And whenever we have a law enforcement officer who takes a shot at a particularly a black teenager, we explode, and some of us say, gosh, that poor officer, he's worried about, he's in danger. He may have done wrong, but he was basically, what would I have done in his shoes? Then you've got others who say, why is it that so many black kids are those who are the ones who get wounded and killed? This has got, all of this that's raging in the country has got to have some impact on your work, and that you must have some wisdom to share with us about it.
Well, I tell you, you know, the narrative across the nation has been one that's been very loud and very vocal. We have been either extremely blessed or very well trained or just fortunate not to have had to deal with the issues that are going on around this country. When you break down the numbers and you look at the number of police incidents of use of force comparatively with other assaults, other crimes that take place, the numbers are very, very small. One wouldn't know that from listening to the narrative. The problem I have with it is this. The first thing that comes up in conversation is, well, if you care about the officer killing the individual, why don't you care about the individual killing the individual? That's got nothing to do with it. That individual didn't put his hand on a Bible and take an oath to swear and uphold the Constitution and the laws of this nation. The officers did. So the officers should be held to a higher standard. I invite that higher standard, and I want us to be held to a higher standard, and that's why we train to that higher standard. I think that the thing that's being lost along the way is just because it happened in Kansas or just because it happened in Milwaukee doesn't mean it's going to happen here. But as the leader of an organization, if you don't prepare for that, you're failing your agency.
What can you do to prepare for it? Well, you say training, but what is the you got? You're hiring young deputies. We all know that that there is, that there are times in our lives, and I don't want to, males and females, but mainly males at a young age when we're stronger, more effective, and in some respects, and capable physically to be a great law enforcement, we have these, still have some of these raging chemicals that are left over from. So how do you train young officers, or and older ones too? How do you train them?
There are several levels of training. The first thing that we did is we recognized the fact that, you know, we take our officers out on the firing range. And I just want to go back 20, 25 years. We'd go to the firing range and we'd fire 500 rounds daytime qualification and 500 rounds nighttime qualification. So 1,000 rounds twice a year, 2,000 rounds a year. And the question was asked, officer, how many times have you been to the firing range in the last year? I've been twice. And how many rounds did you fire in the time that you were in training? Well, 2,000 rounds. At any time during the time you were trained at the range, did you ever draw your weapon and not fire it? No. So there was a problem. Mm. So back in the, I would say, mid-90s, we started training to draw and challenge. And the officer never knew when it was going to occur, but during the firing qualification, the range instructor would say, you know, when the bell went off, he would say, challenge. And you would say, police, don't move. And you were taught to drop your weapon down, scan the area for any threats, and holster your weapon. And that was something that we worked into training. Now, I'm not really crazy, and I'm not stupid, and I understand that that was done for liability reasons. The one thing we never did in the mid-90s was train officers to be able to differentiate what was a threat and what wasn't. They were looking at the same target, and it was a paper target on the range. It didn't move. It didn't threaten anyone. It didn't run. It didn't come at you. It hung on a piece of cardboard. So we had to get creative in the way we trained, and we came up with combat courses, which offered scenarios different for every officer that ran through that they were told as they were going through that range qualification. That wasn't good enough either. So a company, and there are several companies that had these, but the one that we purchased is called Meggetts, and it's called a Firearms Training Simulator, or FATS. What FATS does, it's a grown-up video game. The officer walks into a room, and they have a screen that surrounds them. They have an electronic weapon, which is called Blue Fire. It's a Bluetooth gun that's in their holster, just like the gun that they carry. It operates exactly like the gun they carry. It's got a magazine like the gun they carry. It has recoil like the gun that they carry. It just doesn't fire a projectile. It's an electronic sensor that tells that target board where it has struck and if it struck. The range master, who's running that device, can change the branches of what occurs based on the actions of the officer. So we're teaching our officers not to shoot better, but to think better. And whether you're young, whether you're old, if you've been in that scenario, as Sun Tzu said, if you train in practice, you will do in battle. And that is the training method that we have employed. The county was gracious to me when I came into office to allow my budget, about $65,000, to purchase this machine. And we use it. It's open to Chapel Hill, Carrboro. We've trained Alamance County Sheriff's Office on it. They had a breakdown in one of theirs, and they came down and used ours. But what it has done is allowed our training time to go from I have to drive to Durham or I have to drive to Burlington, I have to have an instructor, I've got to have rounds of ammunition, I've got to give that man over or woman overtime to go to that range. Now they walk across the street, take 1 hour, and they're done.
Well,
and it's teaching our officers to think through scenarios, to not use deadly force when it's not necessary, and to use it when it's the last resort. The other training that we're using is verbal judo. Verbal judo is a means, a gentleman by the name of Doc Thompson, he's a former police officer.
I'll tell you what, Sheriff, let's take a quick break and then come back to the verbal
judo. Yes, sir.
Judo. If you join us late, we're visiting with Charles Blackwood. He's given us, we're getting to the guts of what he's doing in terms of his training, and we'll take a short break and then be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Sheriff Charles Blackwood. We're talking about his responsibilities as sheriff of Orange County, and I think we've hit the core of maybe what might be one of your greatest responsibilities, and that's training. And you gave us one example of a really sophisticated program to help your officers do a better job of assessing the situation when they're going to use deadly force and not do it,
or not do it. Yep.
And now this thing about verbal judo, what is that?
Doc Thompson is a former police officer, retired police officer, who came up with the Doc Thompson Verbal Judo Institute. And we're talking about deflecting words and words that diffuse situations and allow you to take control of a situation or a combatant with the use of positive words. A good example of this is a child brings home a report card. It has four A's and an F. And the father comes home, finds the report card, looks at it, and has a decision. He can use natural language or he can use verbal judo. Natural language is, what the hell? Why did you bring home this F? Verbal judo would be, yeah, that looks pretty good. And then the kid is going to say to the father, did you look at that report card? Now you got some two-way communication. And the father's able to say, yeah, I did. And he walks away again, verbal judo. And the kid says, but Dad, did you really look at it? He said, yeah, you talking about that F? He said, yeah. He said, yeah, if I was in high school, I wish I could have got four A's. That's verbal judo. If you say anything other than that, child's not going to listen to you. So he says to the child, you know, you got four A's. I figure if you got an F, you probably wanted it. You probably don't like the teacher. And the kid says, well, yeah, you're right, I don't. Well, guess what? They probably don't like you either. Now, how cool would it be to make them give you a B? So you tie value into that B, and that child goes back to school and gets the B to bring it home to show you, ah, look what I did to that teacher. So the same type of things can be used, and we brought that. I called the training people up in Hillsboro at the county with human resources, and I asked them, could we bring this together? We got them. They came into the county, and we opened it up to the dog catchers. We opened it up to the tax collectors. We opened it up to the sanitation workers and all the other area law enforcement agencies and anyone else who wanted to come. And it was a wonderful, wonderful program. And we got them coming back this month, and we got them coming back in October.
I think I need some of that training.
It's good stuff.
Did you learn anything from this?
I did. I started studying Doc Thompson in the 80s. I mean, he's been around that long. The other program that we've got coming up is the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. We've got a group that these guys are just amazing. They can teach you in grappling how to subdue a subject and not have to use deadly force. So it's another method. We've got our words, we've got our actions, and we've got our brains, and we can do so much to prevent having to use deadly force.
Sheriff, I'd love to talk more about the training. This is interesting, but I promise you that we got about 2 minutes. For you to just give us a message of things that are important to you and what you and your officers are doing or what you would ask us to do for you.
Well, that's really easy, and that is just be supportive of us. Understand that we're human and we're likely to make mistakes. We strive for excellence. We hope we meet that standard. We try every day. We get up in the mornings. We leave our families to come and take care of some of society's failures. And it just seems like now in this day, law enforcement has been asked and tasked with taking care of all of society's ills. And we're overworked nationally. Officers feel like they're lost because they don't have answers. So when we work together as a community and understand that this is your sheriff's office, we simply take care of it for you. And as a member of this community, take ownership in that value of that sheriff's office that's there and understand that we do much more than put people in jail and write speeding tickets. We're problem solvers. I'll guarantee you if you reached out to anybody who's had interaction with us, they'll tell you that we strive for a high degree of customer service. We're very personal, very approachable. You can reach us on Facebook. You can reach us on Twitter. I answered a Facebook message last night after 11 o'clock. Somebody had a problem. They didn't know anybody else to call, and they sent me a message on Facebook. So we're here for you. We're problem solvers. We're just as able to help you in the city as we are in the county, and we're very proud of what we're doing. The men and women that come to work each day do it because they love it, not because they're getting rich doing it.
Sheriff, thank you.
Thank you, Dean.
Sheriff Charles Blackwood, our sheriff. Thanks to him for sharing. Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.